telecommunications giant WorldCom adjusted its books again this week. The company says that when it found nearly $4 billion improperly accounted for, even that accounting was incomplete. Auditors have since found another $3.3 billion in off-the-books expenses. Top executives at all of the nation's biggest corporations have until Wednesday to make sworn statements that their latest financial reports are accurate. The Securities and Exchange Commission imposed this deadline in part to reassure stockholders after the financial scandals at WorldCom, Enron, and elsewhere. Our friend from the business world, Joe Nocera, is executive editor of Fortune magazine, and he joins us from our bureau in New York. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Steve.
So what is the government trying to accomplish with this deadline? What does the government want to force companies to do here?
Well, you should know it was ginned up in the middle of the night by Harvey Pitt and a few people at the SEC on the day that WorldCom announced the biggest accounting fraud in American history.
Harvey Pitt, the chairman of the SEC.
That's right. So it was a reactive, you know, he felt like we have to do something that shows that we mean business. So this is what they decided to do. The effect of it really, I think, is twofold. One, it has the potential to show if there are any more problems out there, because CEOs are going to be pretty reluctant to put their name on something if they're not absolutely certain, especially in this environment, that the numbers are correct. So I think it's quite plausible you'll see a few more restatements between now and Wednesday. But the second purpose of it, and really the long-term purpose of it, is to eliminate what you might call the Ken Lay defense, which is the CEO and the chairman of the board basically saying, gee, I didn't know these bad things were happening. And, you know, if they get caught doing something bad, it should make it marginally easier to put them in the slammer.
Do the leaders of the stock market, of the financial markets, do they really expect the government to do something about accounting fraud? Or is the objective here just to reassure people that the government appears to be doing something about accounting fraud, which is something different, I think?
The leaders of the financial world kind of wish the government would go away and let them take care of this themselves, which is not going to happen. I think the government would like both to send a signal, which it needs to do because the government has been a day late and a dollar short ever since Enron, and they've been playing catch up. And part of what they've done here is basically to send a signal that, by God, we mean business. But the second part of it, Steve, is I do think that in a handful of high-profile cases, such as Enron, such as WorldCom, such as ImClone, and a few others, they are going to prosecute in an effort to show that people who do commit accounting fraud will go to jail, which will certainly have a good effect on everybody else in the business. So the answer really is, I think, I actually do think the government hopes to be able to do both.
Now, on a closely related subject, I want to ask about an upcoming story in your magazine, Fortune magazine. It says that a lot of executives sold a lot of shares in recent years just before their company's stock prices collapsed. Can you tell me what your reporters were looking for and what they found?
We wanted to see if it was just Gary Winnick of Global Crossing, who, as we all know, took out $735 million in the company as it was collapsing, and Dennis Kozlowski of Tyco, who has now since been indicted, but who took out close to $300 million in the midst of all of Tyco's problems. And just, are these really the exemplars of greed, or was there a much bigger problem here? And the answer that we came up with is there is, in fact, a much bigger problem here. What we found was that, you know, we took a whole universe of companies, like 1,000 companies whose stock had fallen by 75% or more since 1999. So that's not only all the dot-coms, but that's the telecoms. That's actually some high-profile companies like AT&T and a few others. And we wanted to say, how much money did the insiders take out even as these stocks were collapsing or they were able to take advantage of the bubble? And the answer we got, believe it or not, was $66 billion. Insiders were taking down hundreds of millions of dollars, and the poor sap shareholders were left holding the bag.
And you've got some of the biggest names of business in the 1990s on this list as people who sold out of their own companies even as they were going down the tubes. John Malone, who was with AT&T, Steve Case, AOL Time Warner, Charles
right.
Schwab, a name that has been advertised as synonymous with reliability. This is quite a list of people taking out quite a bit of money.
It is pretty extraordinary. The number one person on the list is somebody who was already a billionaire, Philip Anschutz, who took $1.57 billion out of Quest in 1999. And he would argue it was a private deal with a company, so it wasn't quite the same. It didn't go to individual investors. But the fact that also is he got $8 more a share than the stock was selling for at the time.
So is there anything illegal here, or does this just look bad?
It's not a question of legality. It's a question of what's right. I would say it's worse than just, quote unquote, what looks bad. I mean, chairmen and CEOs and top guys at companies, I mean, they have some fiduciary responsibility to the shareholder. And, you know, when they sell a share of stock to you and me, you know, one of the things they're trying to convey is this is a good stock. This is a good company. We're all in this together and the stock's going to do well. And that is not what happened.
How did the executives explain their stock sales?
Most of them basically said we didn't realize it was a bubble. We had one guy, Naveen Jain at InfoSpace, who said, gee, if I'd known it was a bubble, I would have sold more, which I think is pretty incredible. The standard defense was, you know, which we got from a guy named Joseph Strauss at JDS Uniphase, who, by the way, started selling 3 months after he became CEO. He said, you know, why would I not sell? I was a shareholder like any other shareholder.
And must have had a lot of faith in his own management skills.
Right. I think the big point of our story is to say, you know, you CEOs and you top guys, you're not just a shareholder like any other shareholder. You have a larger responsibility.
I want to ask another question about these people that you studied here. Many of them are the best known people in business because they were lionized in the business press in the 1990s. Somebody like Steve Case or John Malone, they were geniuses 5 or 6 years ago.
This is undeniable.
I'm wondering if this is a hard time to be a business journalist and look back on the coverage that you and many colleagues have done over the last few years.
Well, the fact of the matter, it's a great time to be a business journalist because there's so much news and there's so much to dig into. But I do think that in our profession, with rare exception, there is some sheepishness at the way we lionize some of these guys. And I do think the business press has learned a good lesson here, that we got caught up in the hype just like everybody else, and we helped drive some of that hype.
Business commentator Joe Nocera is executive editor of Fortune magazine, and he speaks with us from our bureau in New York. Joe, thanks very much.
Thanks, Steve.